From runasradio.com, you're listening to Run As Radio, the internet audio talk show for IT professionals with Richard Campbell. This is Brandon Wen announcing show number 696, Cybersecurity During the Pandemic with guest Ann Johnson. Recorded Friday, May 8th, 2020. Run As Radio is produced each week by Sound Thoughts LLC. For more information, visit soundthoughtsllc.com. You can follow us on Twitter at twitter.com/runasradio.
Thank you, Brandon. This is Richard Campbell, and thanks for listening to Run As Radio. My guest today is Ann Johnson, who's a Corporate Vice President for the Cybersecurity Solutions Group at Microsoft, and she oversees the go-to marketing strategies of cybersecurity solutions for one of the largest tech companies on the planet. Welcome, Ann.
Thank you so much. It's great to be here.
You know, that's an amazing statement, because I keep forgetting, having worked so closely with Microsoft for so long on all these different shows, you guys are inventing a big part of the cloud in this modern version of computing, which means you have a view on the security issues around the internet that must be astonishing.
You know, we do. We have, you know, if you think about Microsoft first, our experience with enterprises to begin with, and then think about the work that we've done to move, you know, Office to now Microsoft 365, to build Azure, to build our business application solutions, and all of the intelligence and learnings we get from our customers, and everything we see at global scale, because we do see things, we see many trillions of signals daily at global scale. It gives us a pretty strong point of view from a security standpoint of what we think needs to happen in the market to help our customers and to help our partners.
Yeah, I was just thinking, from phishing attacks alone, looking in the context of Office 365, like, you're seeing those attacks in waves, I got to imagine, across all these different domains that folks host in Office 365.
We are. And it gives us a really good idea. And we publish a lot of that intelligence. We do two things, by the way. Mm-hmm. We put the learnings back into our products to improve the efficacy of the detections and the blocking. But we also publish a lot of things for customers to give them trends, like, are we seeing certain nation state actors, or are we seeing certain ransomware cybercrime gangs in certain geographies? Is there different timing? Is there industries they're attacking? Right now we've seen, unfortunately, due to the current events with COVID, we've seen a lot of phishing lures that were COVID specific, and a lot of attacks, increasing attacks on healthcare, because they're so vulnerable right now, and they're, you know, from a bad actor standpoint, they look like low-hanging fruit because they feel they're going to have to pay, right, if it's a ransomware attack.
Sure.
And we see all of that and are able to give a lot of proactive notifications to our customers, too.
So is there really an uptick in bad actors during a worldwide crisis?
You know, it's funny. There's more of an uptick. I'll characterize it this way. It's more of a change in tactics than it is an uptick in the actual actors themselves. They've changed their tactics to take advantage of vulnerable humans and vulnerable organizations, the stress, the psychology of humans. I've talked about this a bit previously. Mm-hmm. And that people don't have that connected fiber, right? I can't walk down to your office and tap you on the shoulder and say, hey, I got this really strange email. Do you think this is legit? People are kind of, you know, on their own, and they're stressed with their jobs and potentially homeschooling kids, and maybe they have a sick family member, and just worrying about their own health and worried about where to buy groceries, right?
Yeah.
So, you know, we've seen a lot of COVID-related phishing lures that appear to be from, in the U.S., the CDC, or from the World Health Organization, local medical centers. Hey, click here and we'll get you a test right away, or click here and we'll get you an antibody, or click here and here's the cure. Just preying on human psychology.
Yeah, preying on people's fear at a time when I think we're at a heightened level of fear all around.
Correct.
So, and this whole series of shows has been, I've been talking with IT folks that are dealing with their workforce being distributed and battling this challenge of helping people make the right decisions there. So, is there really much the IT people can do? Is this all come down to individual communication?
No, I think there's a lot that IT can do, by mm-hmm. the way. To begin with, and I talk about this all the time, mm-hmm. make certain that 100% of your users are using multi-factor authentication.
Yes.
Because if they do get their credentials stolen, at least it slows down the bad actors, right? You know, and that's what you want to do. You want to raise the cost of attack. to them. Mm-hmm. The second thing is turn up your monitoring. You know, you need to have good anti-phishing solutions in place so that you're taking the decision out of the end user's hands and you're having detection and blocking before the email even gets into my inbox, for example. And make sure that you're looking at those controls and make sure you're getting, you know, and stay connected to your peer group, right? I think the ISACs are fantastic, like the health ISAC or the financial services ISAC, and most industries have one. They know the threats that are going on regionally, but also in their industry. And they have, you know, they have signals they can share with you, threat intelligence they can share. It's a great time to really be part of the cybersecurity community and make sure that you're networking with those communities and you have an ecosystem around you so you're not alone in it.
Yeah, certainly my attempts to speak to anyone in IT, in healthcare, right now during the crisis, they're just absolutely buried. They're not going to have any cycles for anything else other than keeping systems running.
No, same experience, by the way, and we're doing our best to help them keep those systems running. We've prioritized, I lead Microsoft's global incident response team for customers, and we've prioritized, you know, life safety, healthcare, critical infrastructure, first responders for response at the moment. So we're trying to help as best we can.
Yeah, for sure. It horrifies me, the idea that anyone would attack a hospital or healthcare system right now when we need them so badly.
It's happening every day, unfortunately.
Yeah. Yeah. It's, you know, I've worked adjacent to law enforcement in a variety of different ways. And, you know, they say when you look at the darkness looks back. I've got to think you've seen some things you really wish you hadn't seen.
You know, if you work with, and you know this, if you work with law enforcement or you work with forensics folks, they will tell you that there's a stress level that increases with some of, like you said, the things they find on like people's laptops are things they just never want to see.
Yeah. Yeah. No question. And it's astonishing. You know, for the most part, my experience has been that people are really pulling together in this particular time. But of course, there's always exceptions and somebody has to work on the exceptions.
There's been a lot of really good humanity.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, just a lot of really good humanity out there. And I think, unfortunately, what gets the press or what gets blown up, right, is the bad stuff or the unusual stuff. And we're not telling enough of the good stories yet.
Yeah, it'll take longer for those to come out. And I'd love to share the links of things like the Healthcare Cybersecurity Group, the ISAC, is a very interesting tool. It makes me think that we've got to make sure every vertical knows where their ISAC is.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And I think most verticals, there's levels of maturity, right? FSISAC is kind of the gold standard. Health ISAC's building up, but there's transportation, there's retail, and they're more, you know, there's more activity in some, less activity in others. But I think that the one thing I've seen, and I'm hoping it's a long-term outcome of this, is there are more cybersecurity people working together than I've seen. I said this, in an interview I was doing a few weeks ago, but in the past, you know, 2 months, it's more than I've seen in 20 years of people really coming together and working as a community. And I'm hoping that's a long-term output of this event.
Yeah, it's interesting to think post-pandemic, like, what are we strengthening here? What are the pieces that we're really building out? It's not just scaling VPNs.
You know, it's interesting because Satya Nadella said in an interview that we've seen more digital transformation in 2 months than we've seen. I think it was 2 months. It was either 2 weeks or 2 months, but I think it was 2 months than we've seen, you know, in years. And what we're seeing is not just scaling out of VPNs, but organizations, and I'll go outside security for a minute, but organizations really focusing on their business continuity and their resilience, their operational resilience, and how they can function through, because this isn't, unfortunately, probably going to be the only one of these type events we're going to see, right? So we see a lot of organizations really focusing more on business continuity and operational resilience than we've seen in the past. And then that extends to all parts of their IT, but also their communications, their legal, their HR. You know, you think about all the functions of an organization, how their executives are communicating. Then you just layer security on top of that, right? And you say, okay, is it going to, I read something that a couple of tech companies are telling their employees, you know, you're going to work from home, you know, all year this year. That we don't expect you back in the office in calendar year 20. So is that going to be a long-term trend, right? Is that going to be, because a lot of places went open, you know, open seating, right?
Right.
Open space. How do you do that? Considering that people want to be, you know, I don't think in 3 months people are going to suddenly be comfortable sitting, you know, 2 feet from a peer again, yeah, right? So how do you accommodate all of that?
You've got two people in a cube in some cases, and yeah, they're just a couple of feet apart. It's kind of nuts. I also appreciate from a leadership perspective to telling your staff, no, you're going to work home for the rest of the year so that they stop thinking about this is temporary, that we get to think in terms of months about this. In some ways, it feels like you're giving people some certainty in an extremely uncertain time.
Well, you are. And I did a mental health webcast, by the way, earlier this week. And mm-hmm. one of the comments I made, and I think it's really important for people to hear, you're not working from home right now. You're forced to do your job at home because of a global pandemic. Mm-hmm. So as employers, the one thing we can do is help relieve that stress, right? Because there are people that work from home and that have worked from home for years, and they do it very effectively and very well. There's other folks that are suddenly home, and maybe they have school-aged children home, and their other spouse is home, and you know, their entire household is home. And it's a very different thing. So anything an employer can do to relieve that stress during this time and to relieve any uncertainty is really helpful to employees.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think for us in the front lines of IT to be able to help folks that are working from home for the first time, try and make those systems work a little better for them.
Exactly. We did, and I'm, by the way, I travel so much and I'm frequently on the road. I'm not an office bound person typically. Mm-hmm. So I'm used to working on just my laptop. But we did something at Microsoft where we allowed employees to go back in the office and take like their Bluetooth mouse or their Bluetooth keyboard or their large monitor home, right? So they could have a similar setup at home than they have in the office. So it was, I think that it's little stuff like that, I think, that goes a long way with folks.
I had a great conversation with an IT person who was dealing with a number of work from home for the first time folks that they just did not have a good enough gear. And he actually packed up their office machines and shipped them out to them. So they had their normal work machine, just now it's at home.
Yeah. And I think that's the stuff that people are going to remember. And that's the stuff that we as IT professionals can do to actually make the lives of folks that are, remember, not every, we're a little spoiled because we mm-hmm. live in tech, right?
Yeah.
So we are a little spoiled and we have to realize that not everybody is as tech savvy and not everybody is as resilient and can get as fast ahead of it. So
I also think there's a mindset in technology where we're so used to dealing with unusual problems that this is just another unusual problem, and you're immediately working on solutions to it.
I completely agree, especially if you're in security. Your job isn't the same any day, right? You're a first responder in a lot of ways. So we're used to dealing with a lot of ambiguity, a lack of clarity, and a lot of folks aren't. They go in, they love it. They do the same job.
Yeah,
they do it really well. And they're not used to having a lot of ambiguity in their workday.
And we appreciate them, too, because they're happy doing that, and it makes us crazy. So I'll go deal with the weird stuff. You do the everyday stuff, okay?
Correct. I remember my parents at one point in my life when I was like a little uncertain. They were like, why don't you be an accountant? And I thought through that for a minute. I said, you know, accountants are wonderful people. I couldn't be an accountant.
No, and I love my accountant. I'm a huge fan of Nazim. He is great because then I do not have to do those things.
Correct.
There are square pegs and round pegs and holes for each of them. We should have always value the differences. The fact that But I really get your deeper point on this, which was just because we thrive on uncertainty doesn't mean that most people do. And we got to give some bandwidth to the folks that are struggling just with the nature of this work.
Yeah. And we have to be, I think the one thing IT people can do is be a little more empathetic. We have to realize that we have this, you know, that we have this natural affinity for what's happening right now. And a lot of people just don't.
Yeah. And it's not that easy. And I'm going to interrupt for one moment for this very important message. Your users are working remotely, and the bad guys know it. New phishing attacks are already landing in the inboxes of your users. Are those computers as protected as they would be if they were on premises? If their machine catches ransomware, how fast can you get it fixed? Don't be the IT admin who could have done something, but didn't. Block the badness and prevent business continuity problems at the source by using Policy Pack on your remote work Windows 10 machines. With Policy Pack, you get the power to manage applications and browsers on Windows 10, overcome application UAC prompts, block unknownware, dynamically configure the Windows 10 start screen, taskbar, and file association. As a bonus, you can use Policy Pack to deliver any real on-prem group policy and group policy preferences settings to your remote work machines for the security and configuration they need. Learn how thousands of other admins enhance their remote work scenarios. Come to policypack.com/remotework to learn more. That's policypack.com/remotework. Policy Pack, securing your standards. And listeners to this podcast are eligible to win a free copy of the Cybex Wiley book entitled MDM, Fundamental Security and the Modern Desktop, Using Intune, Autopilot, and Azure to Manage, Deploy, and Secure Windows 10 by Jeremy Moskowitz, Enterprise Mobility MVP. Simply pick Run As Radio in the dropdown when you visit policypack.com/remotework. Good luck, and we hope you win. And we're back. It's Run As Radio, one of the pandemic series episodes. I'm Richard Campbell, and this is my guest, Corporate Vice President Microsoft, Ann Johnson. And actually, I want to poke on another side of this, because I'm also seeing that even IT folks, even folks that normally thrive on this ambiguity, they're not as productive. They do seem to be struggling to some degree. I mean, I think the pandemic's having impacts with us that we can only do so much.
I think it's a couple of things, right? I think that first, let's take the really logical things. Some of them have children at home. Mm-hmm. They're trying to homeschool.
Yeah.
They may not have ever been set up to work from home, so they don't have the right environment. Their desk, or their, maybe their office is in their bedroom, or their office the family room where everybody's coming in and out, right? So they may not be set up for it. They're probably we changed our entire lives from the way from the most basic things, how we acquire groceries, how you get food and supplies, basic supplies into your home has changed. Your entire daily routine of going, whether you went to the gym in the morning, getting a haircut. I think we should expect that people are incredibly stressed because a whole lot of stuff around them changed. Then you add the children at home. You add they're worried about an elderly or a vulnerable family mm-hmm. member. Maybe they have a sick family member, right? Or they've lost someone. I think it's unrealistic to expect people are going to be as productive right now, no matter what field they're in, by the way, as they were pre this event. And I think that psychologically, I was reading something about the long-term psychological impacts, not even the physical impacts of folks that may not have ever been sick or may not even had a family member sick, but they're going to have long-term psychological impacts. And it's not something we can overlook.
No, and nor can we resolve at this particular moment. I have a good friend who is in a critical industry, so he should be working, but his mother, who's very elderly, is living with him, and he's like, I can't take the chance. I'm just not leaving the house. Like, no, I got to protect her. He would be fine, but he can't abide the idea that he would harm his mother in any way.
I have a vulnerable family member who has severe asthma and a heart condition who lives with me.
Yeah.
And I quarantined early and hard. And I will continue to do so because of the same thing. I myself consider myself to be in decent health. I don't have any underlying issues I know of. Do you know what I mean? But mm-hmm. still.
Yeah. I don't really want to find out.
Neither do I, but I don't want to bring it home. I wouldn't be able to, live with the guilt of that. Right. Yeah. So.
I am fascinated with this shift in priorities that we've had in our work as IT folks, where an awful lot of these projects, whether they're security related or scale related and so forth, we had them. They were on the to-do list, but they went from low on the list to the top of the list.
Yeah. Well, I think that COVID itself has added a lot of stressors. And then you add the stress of the cybersecurity threats. Mm-hmm. And then you add your stress of not getting your to-do list done. Or getting your to-do list done, by the way. I've learned more about I love to cook and bake anyway. It's actually my go-to stress reliever. So and I'm an introvert, right? So for folks like me, I'm still stressed, but probably less so than some other people. Mm-hmm. One of my to-do lists was to get better at baking bread. I've actually become reasonably decent at it. I wouldn't say good, but there are other things on my to-do list that I can accomplish right now. And for folks that their to-do list was more oriented around social things or going to see, maybe they, I've always wanted to go. They had a big trip planned. I was talking to a friend of mine, by the way, whose 30th wedding anniversary she and her husband had saved, and they were doing a first, top notch, first class trip to Bermuda and had to cancel.
And had to stop.
About kids who aren't having, graduations, proms. There's a lot going on.
Yeah. I've got a neighbor with a graduating daughter whose prom is off. And you and I both travel for a living. It's weird that I've been home this long, but I'm really not that emotional about canceled travel either, just because I've had many things cancel over the years. But somebody who's planned a lifetime trip and now it's been delayed, it's quite distressing.
It is. And I'm the same with you, right? Yeah, because I travel so much, I'm not distressed about being home. You know, I've seen, but to your, yeah, you're exactly right. And yeah, like I said, then you add the stress in our industry of the increased cyber threats. And folks are just not, they're not themselves. You know, it's a little thing. I know with me, it's the little thing that'll push me over the edge, right? And I find a lot of people saying the same thing. Yeah. It's just that, you know, hey, Instacart didn't bring the one thing on my grocery list.
Well, you know? I have a good friend who runs security for a company in local, and he was big on routine tests of phishing trials, like running phishing emails where if you did click on it, you know, that would get you looped into training, and he gave out awards. But he said, like, this isn't funny anymore. Like, I don't want to do this because people are stressed enough. So in some sense, he's relaxing his security posture a bit just because the tests aren't, it doesn't seem like a good time.
Yeah, you know, I think we're all in the same boat, and people are working hard to get their employees working from home in a secure manner. And mm-hmm. we're, you know, as Microsoft, we've worked very hard to enable secure remote work for our customers, but it is a changed security. So I don't know if, we found that customers in the first couple of weeks definitely relaxed their security controls to get people home. Now they're, you know, they're ramping them back up, but they're changing them.
Right.
So something that will further stress your employees may not be the right thing, but that doesn't mean you need to relax your controls.
Yeah, I do feel like folks are already in the midst of change, so why not add the things that make things tougher? MFA being a great example of that, but just get them on a password manager. It's one of those things you just have to spend some time on. But once it's done, actually, I think your life's better.
I do think your life becomes better, right? And, you know, and it gets people away from using the same path. It helps people improve their personal hygiene, too. Mm-hmm. And that's one thing that I think employers, and I know Microsoft, were focused a lot on doing a lot of education for consumers on security. And this is a good time to do it because they're having to do things on their work machines that maybe they never had to use MFA in the office. We required it even when you're in the office, right. But maybe they're having to use it now for the first time. Right. Yeah. And then they're thinking about how that authenticator or how that password manager or how the biometric can translate to their personal life.
Yeah. And there's things you can do and things you can't do. I tried to get some more YubiKeys. You can't get YubiKeys right now.
Really? I didn't know that.
Yeah. It's just, I mean, I think all of those people moving all at once, all of them have been bought up and they can only make them so fast. So yeah, it's funny what you can and can't do. An earlier pandemic show, we were talking about scaling VPNs, and you can't buy VPN hardware right now. It's all sold out. So the software-based VPNs are much easier because you can just light up additional VMs and be able to scale it that way. It's just interesting to think through your security solutions. Like, suddenly the debate about using an authenticator app kind of goes away because it's the one thing for sure you can get everyone.
It is the one thing for sure you can get everyone. By the way, I don't think that, and this is not in any way meant to as any disparagement to any VPN vendor. I don't think going to software VPNs is the worst thing that people can do. I think it's actually a pretty good idea. Mm-hmm. Remember, we started this conversation talking about cloud. The ability to put anything in your environment to be elastic with it, to scale up and scale down, is what customers will need short and long term. We're seeing a massive growth in Windows Virtual Desktop.
Yeah, I have a whole show just on the topic because, yeah, it's such an interesting solution to getting work done.
Correct. We're doing a lot of work with Citrix. And like I said, it just gives that elasticity and that scale up and scale up. And I think that's the type of solutions we need to put mm-hmm. in place. So it's going to force change in the industry. And the one thing that you know about multi-factor authentication, by the way, is that people use it every day anyway. Sure. That's how they authenticate to their smart device for the most part, or to the apps on their smart device, or to a payment, you know, tool on their smart device. So getting them in the behavior of doing that at work is just, you know, we've made it very frictionless at this point in time.
Now, and I admit to have listened to a few of your afternoon cyber tea shows, and it seems like, generally speaking, the security professionals are downed on using SMS as a secondary authenticating factor. This just seems vulnerable.
It is vulnerable, and we are pretty down on it. There was actually, I don't know if you follow me on Twitter at all, but one of my friends had made a meme for May the 4th. So, you know, the mm-hmm. Star Wars Day, as they call it.
Yeah.
And it was that it was all based around SMS authentication and how bad it is with, you know, with Luke Skywalker and Darth Vader. It was quite funny, actually.
Brilliant.
But it can be intercepted, right? There's and you also have SIM hijacking. There's a lot of badness. However, I'm going to say this. It's still better than passwords.
Right.
So SMS may not be as good as using an authenticator or using a YubiKey or using something else. Mm-hmm. It's still better than a password.
Right. So make it your last MFA choice, but given no other option, it's better than not having an MFA option.
That is correct. And I think there was, when I did the podcast that we recorded a week or two ago with Allison Nixon, you know, she made a really great point that, you know, we shouldn't expect the telcos to be security providers. That's actually not their remit.
Right. Although,
you know, so it was interesting.
But Microsoft does take that responsibility on. Like, there is an advocacy here for moving to the cloud because it can be more secure.
We fundamentally believe we can keep our customers more secure in the cloud for a couple of reasons. Number one, they can't hire all the security professionals they need and train all the security professionals they need. Mm-hmm. So we can hire, you know, one security admin and have them looking after multiple customer environments as opposed to the 10 customers trying to hire someone. The second thing is we do see multi-trillions of threats signal on a daily basis globally. So it's not just the volume, but it's the diversity of signal we see from around the world and the types of systems we see signal from. So we have that richness of signal to get us better indicators of attack or indicators of compromise than our customers will see. And then we see it across the entirety of the Microsoft platform. So we can, to your point, we can look at all, you know, what the feeds we get with Office with our anti-phishing solutions, the feeds we get on the desktop and in the Azure environment. We put all that together so that we have end-to-end threat detection and end-to-end blocking and protection. And that's something that customers struggle with because a lot of customers are still very much in a best of breed. They have to wire it together, security solution environment. So we do think the cloud, the other thing I'll tell you the cloud does, which is really, you know, for me, it was just a huge win, is that if we see something, if we detect a threat and we block it in, you know, let's say we detect and block something in Beijing, it never makes it to Sao Paulo, right? Because we've taken care of it. You couldn't do that before the cloud, and we can do it in milliseconds.
Yeah, it's almost parallel to the pandemic. You know, if we had been able to lock down this virus before it crossed borders, you know, the world would be a very different place. You have an opportunity to do that with different kinds of cyber attacks.
We do, and we do it every day. We are our machine learning technology has gotten good enough that we can detect and block, you know, previously unknown malware in milliseconds and do it at global scale. And that's something we couldn't have done before the cloud.
Yeah, just that, again, that sort of catbird seat of all this traffic all over the world from, I don't know, how many data centers up to now? 60, 70?
Every time I look, it's a little different, but I think we're close to 60. 60 is directionally correct.
Okay. This may be a little off subject, though, because there's this other aspect of cybersecurity that Microsoft's been involved in where you're actually going after the bad actors. Like every so often, we have a news story where you've been a part of a criminal activity, you know, taking down criminals on this. Can you speak to that? Is that part of your role as well, Anne?
So we coordinate. So our detection and response team coordinates with the Digital Crime Center who does that. It's run under Tom Burt's organization and he does an exceptional job there leading that team. And they work with global law enforcement and they work with governments globally to take those actions. And it's a tremendous, Dallas can provide you, some stats, if you're interested in looking at them of how many botnets they've taken down and how many credentials they've recovered. I don't have them off the top of my head, but it's a huge value to the world, by the way. This is just something we're doing that's something that's needed and necessary, but it's another place where they have a tremendous relationships and collaboration with global law enforcement and with global governments in taking those actions.
And you have the visibility into it because they're bouncing through your cloud on the way to whoever they're attacking. And so you know, you're in an interesting role there as well. So I appreciate that's going on. It's just not the Microsoft of old. You know, I don't think you sign up to be a cloud provider because that's what you want to do all day.
No, and it's not. I mean, I've only been in Microsoft 4.5 years, and I can tell you so I don't have some of that historical view that folks, at least inside, but I've been in tech over 30. This is certainly not joining here. under Satya's leadership is certainly not what my previous perception of Microsoft would have been.
Sure.
But the openness and collaboration, even the things we're doing with open source, right? Well beyond the acquisition of GitHub, the embracing of Linux and the is just something you wouldn't have seen previously at Microsoft. And I think Satya recognizes that. We talk a lot about how cybersecurity has to be an ecosystem. Well, tech has to be an ecosystem also. And he fundamentally recognizes that.
Yeah, I recently saw that the Azure Sphere, the IoT devices they're building with their own flavor of Linux. That's right. Microsoft's making a version of Linux. They're offering a bounty if anybody can crack it. They really want the thing to be challenged and utterly bulletproof.
Really, really do want the thing to be utterly bulletproof. And we will continue to have those challenges out there for folks to do bug and working on our bug bounties. We also yesterday have started our Azure Sentinel hackathon competition. So we want to, one of our missions is, you hear us say we want to empower every person and every organization on the planet to achieve more. Well, the only way we do that is A, by producing the right tools and technology to help them, but B, giving them the right skills and training and challenges to make folks, more productive with the tools that they have available to them. So it's a great place to work, by the way. And the things that we've done during the global pandemic to support our employees and support our customers and partners are extraordinary.
Yeah, I see. It's interesting that the pandemic seems to have brought out a lot of gratitude. I've seen a lot of messages on Twitter from various folks at Microsoft saying, like, I'm really glad I work for this company right now.
Yeah. It's just a great place to be.
Yeah.
We've taken into account a lot of different things, including, leave time for people, specific extended leave time. If you need to just take a few weeks off so you can homeschool your children, that's okay.
Yeah.
There's a lot of things we've done with our employee assistance programs at global scale, and there's just a lot we've done to recognize, and to your point earlier, that people just aren't as productive right now as they potentially could be. And we don't want that to have a negative impact on their Microsoft career.
Yeah, no, I appreciate that. And it's an interesting sort of reality that it's like, this is hard right now. And so we all got to have some bandwidth for it. But I'm also seeing general gratitude, like folks are valuing the circle that they've got, the space that, that they're able to work in, and that there's good things here.
There's really good things here.
Well, thanks for fighting the good fight, Anne. I really appreciate you spending some time with us. And I think, as we're getting out of the pounding surf and figuring out ways to continue to work, recognizing this is going to go on for months, that there are more security improvements that can be made for every organization.
There are, like, you're never, whenever I hear someone say something's unhackable or perfectly secure, that doesn't exist.
Oh no, that's a way to call out the gods of vengeance and irony, right? Just ask the Titanic, like, don't say that stuff. You know, it's going to go badly for you.
Yeah. And we just need to continually improve and stay one step ahead of the bad actors. Mm-hmm. And like I said, raise the cost of attack to them and make their job harder.
Yeah. Make it expensive for them. And I feel like we're getting ahead. Now, the cloud seems to have been the strengthener for us, that this concentration so that you have these viewpoints is making it harder for the bad actors to stress us.
I completely agree. And we're going to continue to put all the tools and humans, don't forget about the humans, mm-hmm. Behind it to make sure that we continue to improve.
Anne Johnson, thanks for coming on Run As. And we'll talk to you next week on Run As Radio.